The anonymity and accessibility of the internet makes it a popular forum for terrorist groups. The Saudi-based group that kidnapped and beheaded American engineer Paul Johnson posted photographs of the execution on the web last Friday. While terrorists' presence on the internet is far-flung, tracking their activities online has proven difficult. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Gabriel Wyman. He is a senior fellow at the United States Institute for Peace, author of the report www.terror.net, How Modern Terrorism Uses the Internet, and it's good to speak with you again.
Hi, Nick.
Let's start with the example of Paul Johnson. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula was the name of the group that took responsibility for this. Where were those photographs originally posted?
Well, this is a good example how terrorists can use the global nature of the Internet. They execute somebody in Saudi Arabia, late Mr. Johnson. They post the pictures, the terrible pictures, on a website in England. And it's picked up by American media, international media, and soon it's all over the world.
But can't investigators, technologically sophisticated people, track that website back to its origin?
No, this actually, you know, you spoke about blogging, and this is the nice side of the Internet, and now we are speaking about the dark side of the Internet, because the beauty of the Internet, the openness, the liberal access, the open access to everyone, is being abused by modern terrorism. Now, they know how to use the Internet in a way that will not allow tracking them down in a way of identifying the individual user.
They can't do it.
Well, they use different tactics. I don't want to turn it into a school for modern terrorist use of the Internet, but basically they can hijack websites. They can post messages on open forums and chat rooms, including Yahoo groups, for example, which is frequently used by Al-Qaeda messages. They can use public domains to access the Internet, let it be Internet cafe, let it be libraries, universities, and disappear within 5 minutes. So you can track them down. You won't find the user.
Mm. But if it's only up for 5 minutes, how does anybody know to find it?
Well, that's actually what my job as a researcher is. But they do an excellent job in notifying the world about that. That is, they use chat rooms, forums, billboards, and inform and direct the supporters, even the journalists, to the website. Last Friday, for example, when the beheading of late Mr. Johnson happened, I was interviewed by CNN. And immediately they asked me to look for the website. Mm-hmm. We found the website, the English one, and we couldn't access it because the whole world was trying to access it, and actually it collapsed, only to show you how popular it becomes, and within seconds, not even 5 minutes.
And even after it's up and then down, you may find the Internet cafe from which it came, but that doesn't do you a lot of good.
Right. There's different levels, I would argue. You can go down, you can probably track down very fast the internet provider, the ISP.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably track the network or the computer that was used. But to find the individual user who may be disappearing like seconds after using the computer, that will be a hard job.
Mm-hmm. Are there other obstacles that counterterrorism authorities face while trying to track down terrorist activity online?
Yeah, well, there is a big issue, and this is the debate of the civil liberties. That is, how far are you going or willing to go and pay with your civil liberties or for fighting terrorism? That is, one of the prices that we pay for modern terrorism might be the price, the heavy price, of freedom of speech, freedom of communication, censoring the internet, and the problem of defining who should be tracked, who could do the tracking, what kind of information is considered to be terrorist information. For example, it's very clear that we won't like to have Al-Qaeda using the internet, and we would like to censor and block every attempt to use it. But how about supporters? How about people who are followers, are not active members of the organization? Will you censor the websites too?
Mm-hmm. All of those are interesting questions. We were speaking a moment ago in the American political context of backstabbing websites. Wouldn't it be possible for, well, let's just pick a name out of a hat, the Central Intelligence Agency or the Mossad or somebody like that, to put up a false terrorist website to confuse the opposition?
Well, I'm quite sure they do many things. We know that they do monitoring the internet, and they try to track down every information and every identity they can from the internet. We know that they are sitting in chat rooms and watching the traffic. They pose as members online, virtual members. I'm quite sure they do all of it. And but still, we have to realize that this is a very dynamic arena of conflict. Security or counterterrorism agencies react to terrorists, terrorists react to the reaction of counterterrorism. So we may find that modern terrorism may change its presence in the internet to a more sophisticated way.
So the technological jujitsu that a lot of people spoke of on 9/11, using the West's own technology, in that case airplanes, to attack it, in a way, you say they're using the internet the same way.
Right. This is one of the paradoxes. The sad paradox is this. Some of those groups that are so hostile to Western, I would say, technology, to Western communication, are using as a weapon the Western, more sophisticated technology, the internet.
And also, I mean, cell phones, are those, given all of the word that we had about, tracking cell phones in Afghanistan, are those still being used and monitored quite as much?
No, you see, this is a good example how modern terrorism is fast to react to some counterterrorism measures. After September 11, when several counterterrorism agencies worldwide were tracking terrorists, including in the Middle East and the Far East, using the cellular network. That is, they could identify the caller, his location, and so on. The terrorists moved to a new medium, the internet, which is not that easily accessed, not that easily to identify the user, as the cellular phones were.
And, of course, it's been a long time since the computers themselves were so expensive that you couldn't afford to, and basically everybody could have one if they wanted, and certainly the internet cafe.
But you know, Neil, you don't need one. You go to an internet cafe, you go to a public library, and you just access the internet from every free public domain like that.
Even if, could the provider be held liable even if their site was hijacked?
I don't think so. But some of the providers, especially the American ones, I would say, have their own policies. They have their own guidelines on not to use terrorists, use their websites. Nevertheless, they know they are being abused. They know that they are used. And the question is, how can we demand, or is there any way of demanding some, I would call it, social responsibility from this media, this new media, as we expect some social responsibility from the conventional media, from radio, television, and print? Can we expect those providers to check who is using the websites that they provide?
Gabriel Wyman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Gabriel Wyman, a senior fellow at the United States Institute for Peace, author of the report www.terror.net, How Modern Terrorism Uses the Internet. He was with us here in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.